our last section of talks for the afternoon. Our first speaker of this part two of our symposium, and again, this is a section where we're looking at trying to clarify initiatives for retention of women in entomology and looking at policies of these different groups of representatives we have here today. Our first speaker is Sharon Quisenberry. She has one of these very beautifully colorful name tags as well, with all sorts of honors. Just to name a few, her current position is Vice President of Research and Economic Development at Iowa State University. Previously, she's been a dean at both Virginia Tech and Montana State. She's a fellow of the ESA and a past president of the ESA in 2000. So she has a long list of credentials. We're very happy that today she'll be talking about women in academia.
Thank you, Patty and Rita, for having this. I think it's a time for this to happen, I think, as you'll see. This probably, I think, is one of my more important presentations because we have in the pipeline now women in entomology, as you'll see, but it's not translating as far as academia is concerned. So how can we change the course and retain women and also underrepresented groups in entomology? And let's first of all start with graduate students. And I think you'll see here these are graduate students, and this information comes from CETA. And CETA is a group of administrators in entomology, and they've been keeping these numbers for a long period of time. As you'll notice with PhD students, you'll find the numbers as well as the bar graphs up above. You can see that female PhD students, which is represented by this number, is actually increasing and has been increasing, and there's been a slight decrease in the number of male PhD students. In fact, if we look at this same data back in, I think it's 1993 to 1998, there were only 28% of the females in PhD programs, while now that number reaches about 45.4%. However, I think as you see there, we have another concern too, and that's the static effect of graduate students in entomology now. And even though the numbers are about the same, it's static and it hasn't grown significantly. Another thing that we see is if we look at PhD students and then we look at the number of faculty then, you can see that we have male faculty members, and again there's been a slight decrease over the last year, but you'll notice here with the number of female, it's basically static. Again, you see the same numbers with the PhD male and females are about the same. They're almost equivalent. This equates the percentage of female graduate students then is just slightly below 50%, while the number, the percent of female faculty lies at about 20%. I think probably in the 1960s that number was around 10 or 15%, so it hasn't grown very much. And in fact, if you look across all science and engineering in the United States, about 30% of the faculty members are female. So we're about 10%, at least 10% behind. If you look across all of the, whether it's associate, assistant, or full professor, the women, regardless of rank, lie about in that area, all three of them. These are the assistant and associate male faculty member, and then you find the male full professors, again, with the largest number of faculty by rank. So what are the causes of some of these things? And I think it's very important that we pay attention to these. One is a sense of community. And I know in some entomology departments, the sense of community is absolutely fantastic. Doesn't make any difference if you're male, female, or if you're an underrepresented group, or a woman, or a male. The community, the sense of community and inclusion and acceptance and transparency is very open. You get into other situations, and that's not the case. Also, there's a subcritical mass of females, particularly in the faculty rank, and therefore there are fewer mentors, not only for other faculty women, but also for undergraduate and graduate students. And then there really is a limited or almost non-existent leadership role for many women in entomology departments. There have been just a handful over time consistently, and that's still where the number lies. Barenbaum is the longest running department chair, and then there are a few others that have had those ranks, but again, it's usually about five or six or less nationally on any given time. Also, the premature departure of females from the ranks, and I'll get into the reasons why this is occurring, at least what we think. And then, why should you enter academia? If you're seeing all of these things and the lack of mentorship and the lack of inclusion and the lack of transparency, why should you even want to try? It's an uphill battle. I know when I first entered graduate school in 1975, my first branch meeting, North Central Branch, there were a handful of women. And there weren't very many women in departments at all. And in fact, I was asked by my advisor, tongue-in-cheek, what small college would you like to work at when you graduate? And of course, I said, absolutely, it's going to be a large land-grant university. But he did that on purpose because he knew what I would be up against, and particularly since I was in agricultural entomology. There just weren't that many people. There were taxonomists and physiologists and others, but there were very few in agricultural entomology. So I was very fortunate to get my first job at Iowa State University. And it's nice to see the women of Iowa State here represented very nicely today. Also, other things that we look at, how promotion occurs. There's isolation. There's equity issues with women as far as space, research funding, resources, the ability to publish, and also the ability to network. Females do tend to do more teaching, advising, and committee work. And this is very time-consuming, and it takes away from really our promotion and tenure what we're looked at the most, and that's research and training of graduate students. And so if those numbers are lower to begin with. And then females usually are more impacted by biological clock, many of the issues that we've talked about so far. So female faculty, and I'll repeat this, that if they have children within that first 5 years of a PhD, the tendency to be tenured has been lower in the most recent past. And so I think as we begin to look at these types of things, how can we begin to look at the difficulties and how women are perceived and how we perceive one another so we can get beyond those barriers? So primarily, there is, in many instances, a very chilly environment for women in academia. And that's not only in entomology, it's across the sciences and engineering disciplines. And the reason is because there are biases on student evaluations, on hiring and evaluation of faculty, in balancing an academic and personal responsibilities, and in pay inequities, peer review, as well as tenure and award of that tenure process. But we can't afford to do this anymore. And in fact, the national academies basically have said that the consequences of not being able to implement change is detrimental to the nation's competitiveness. And I firmly believe that. I think we're in trouble across engineering sciences in our universities now. And it's not only gender, but it's a lot of other issues that we're facing too. So let's discuss a little bit about women in science and in engineering in general. Most definitely, women have the capabilities of succeeding in engineering and science. There's no doubt about that. And I think we can also say that there's a loss of females at every level, all the way from elementary school up through the ranks. I know, for example, as a child, I was carrying insects around when I was probably just started walking, but the icky factor came in. And that's the way it is with science. You know, eventually females are turned off against science and mathematics, that you can't do it or it's not suitable or whatever. There's less of that now, of course. But I think if you look along the way, by the time you get into the ranks of faculty, you're turned off at a number of different avenues, and we need to make sure that we don't do that. Also, the pipeline, I think the parity is there now. Basically, we have about equal numbers of graduate students, male and female. And so our pipeline is full, but we're not bringing that forward in academia and hiring women faculty member. And I don't think this is an intentional, and I think that's what's important too. This isn't an intentional thing. It's basically, a lot of it is historical. It's things that we don't even, I think, consciously think about, and that's what we need to start doing, is thinking about what the consequences of some of these old behaviors are and how we get past them. Also, since females are paid less, why? If you do an equal job, you should get paid and you should be rewarded for it. And it's been brought up before, there are less than 9% of our women that are fellows of this society. And I must say that probably I'm just as much to blame as others, because you need to bring people up. I brought people up, but I'm really paying attention to those women out there that definitely deserve the recognition. And I think we need to make a conscious effort of making sure that we reward across all genders and also underrepresented groups, and that we pay attention to that. In addition, I think moving more women into leadership roles. We just don't have the mentoring or the capabilities in a lot of places to do that, and we need to pay attention to it because it's very important. So how do we change? We need to develop best practices. We need to have that warm and accepting environment. We need to be able to recruit, to hire, and to retain, because we lose a lot of people. It's becoming more and more difficult to move up in the ranks. What's expected of our young faculty today are much more severe than what I ever experienced when I started moving through the ranks, because of what you have to do. Not only do you have to publish and train graduate students and teach, or possibly if you have an extension activity, your outreach, but you're also expected to support your programs totally. And so as you begin to do that, and what we're going to see, I think, probably, and what we're shifting to, particularly in agriculture, is only 9-month appointments, with the expectation that you're going to support your salary for those other 3 months. So as we begin, the climate is changing. And as we begin to change, we better be very aware of that and how we can help our young faculty to be successful. Also, we have to create a different culture, one that's transparent, that there's there's communication and people understand, that we make people aware of the tenure and promotion process and what it takes, and that it's not a guessing game, because it absolutely isn't a guessing game. There needs to be adequate mentoring. I know when I came out, if it weren't for some very good male mentors, I wouldn't be standing here today, because there weren't any women. And so you basically need to establish those networks and those mentoring opportunities, and you need to do it both professionally as well as outside of your discipline and in other areas, because you need that too. Networking and integration is extremely important. As we talk about science today, it's not necessarily a discipline-based. It's a convergence of disciplines. Even our granting agencies, as we look at what they want disciplines that are there and together. I'm going to have to speed up, I'm told. Also, recognition and reward, that family work balance, as well as paying attention to dual careers and stop the clock policy. So as we do this and assemble the pieces, we need to have clear expectations. This is all going to be in the article, by the way. Facilitation for resources and how you get them. Frequent and accurate feedback. You reduce impediments. You mentor, network, and integrate. And you respect and you recognize and reward people for the jobs that they do. And basically establish an environment and a culture that's empowering. If we don't do that, we fail. ISU has really done a pretty good job, 21% someone mentioned. We have a department chair, we have faculty at all ranks, we have a dean, and then myself and a vice president, plus Mary Harris will be moving up because they've combined those two departments, so that's more women than I've ever experienced in my career at any one institution, so I'm very proud of that. We need a call for action. We need to be able to put those kinds of things in place and go back and test it. In the article, I'll talk about the ISU Advanced Program and how they're establishing really ideas and opportunities for chairs and deans and how you can do these types of processes that I've just been talking about. The main issues, of course, are time management skills. Balance is very essential, and mentoring and inclusion is exceptionally important. If we don't put those kinds of things in place and create a different environment for all faculty, we'll fail. And I'm talking about, it doesn't make any difference what the gender or the nationality. What we need to do with faculty today is to make sure you don't hire a faculty member to fail, you hire them to succeed. So we need to put an environment and a culture in place that makes that happen. And ending with one last thing, which I think is kind of important, and I'll get out of here. Life-work balance. Sorry about this. It's a proverb, an African proverb. If you educate a man, you educate an individual. But if you educate a woman, you educate a nation. Thank you.